Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium, and everywhere else at 8 p.m.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age!
You want a cup of joe with you?
I'm gonna make you famous, Lizzie.
It's not Al anymore! It's Dunk!
Dunkachino?
Don't mind if I do!
I'm the Joker, baby!
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 19 of season 2. Jeff Lowe, Ken Jack, alongside Chris Castellani and Eddie from Barstool Chicago. I mean, and Barstool Sports, but awesome. Yeah. Chicago guy. He's got a big grin on his face. We'll do a little football primer in a minute, as we always do.
Why are you like Wilson right now, Jeff? I can't. I feel like you're you're like hiding behind a fence right now. You got bad.
Yeah,
face
I do.
On or something?
Yeah, my camera my camera's up, and I'm just gonna be honest. I'm not moving it down. Just seeing my eyes right now. That's how you're gonna get my facial expression all day talking about the Beanie Babies documentary. So I thought the 355 was on Netflix. It's not.
No, I thought so too.
It's not even going to Netflix.
Was it moved at some point, or maybe it's just because like their coloring on like their logos and stuff is all red and white and black.
That's what it is.
Netflix coloring.
The coming soon looks like the Netflix logos. I think I just kept seeing it from afar. It's going to Peacock. It's not even going to Netflix. Yeah. We will talk about that movie. But it's the first like real movie week of the year. Yeah. So it is what it is. We're actually going to talk about the Beanie Baby documentary on HBO Max, which I think is a good jumping off point too for other like craziness and nostalgia. We have an interview with Cameron Monaghan. It was great. Kendrick, you said it, rare mix of, funny, but also thoughtful.
Yeah. It's usually one or the other with the guest. Like they usually have their lane and they stick to it. He was both. It was very, very pleasant.
We'll be doing Scream in the 355 next weekend, by the way. Which I'm excited. Scream. I don't know.
I'm people so excited for.
People love Scream right
hearing
now.
Hearing
so
really
far.
Good things. I'm surprised. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. The reviews aren't live. I think they go live tonight, but the first reactions are all very good.
Yeah.
So yeah. So we'll do that, and then we're doing top five favorite movies of the year. Maybe not necessarily best, but favorite movies of the year. I mean, my favorite list is much different than my top five in terms of best. And we'll talk about that a little bit. Before we get into that. Episode of Lights, Camera, Barstool is brought to you by 3Chi.
This episode brought to you by 3Chi. That's right, 3Chi, number 3, Chi, it rhymes. Industry leader in Delta 8 and other THC products, such as vapes, edibles, gummies, and much more. Visit 3Chi, the number 3CHI.com. That's the number 3CHI.com. Use promo code CAMERA to take 5% off your order. Must be 21 to purchase. 3Chi is absolutely outstanding. And guess what? They have Delta 8 THC drink mixes now. Try their flavorless Delta 8 drink additive for drinks like coffee, tea, juices, or try a flavored Delta 8 drink enhancer mixed with water available in tangerine, lime, pink lemonade flavors. They don't recommend using Delta 8 drink enhancer for the alcoholic beverages, though. Keep that in mind. But 3Chi is absolutely outstanding. Industry leader, Delta 8, federally legal version of THC. Keep that in mind. A more functional alternative to marijuana. Gives an amazing buzz and great body feel, but with a clearer head and less anxiety and paranoia. Available at 3chi.com. It's not CBD. It's psychoactive. Need to stress that. It's psychoactive, so please use it responsibly. But yeah, new drink mixes from 3Chi. Use code CAMERA for 5% off your purchase. 3Chi, the number 3chi.com.
All right. Before we get into some movie news, busy, just a lot of stuff going on. Kenjack prepping for the Chargers, who get in the playoffs if they win or if they tie.
They're not going to tie. No way the kneel off is ever going to happen. For a million reasons, mostly financial. I don't know why anyone thinks that would happen.
Why would you? Yeah, right. Like, because even then, it's like, it's not like a tie. It's not like if they win, they need other things. It's just a straight win and in. So why, like,
It's winning in, and Oakland has like a trillion injuries. I don't understand like why it would even be a thought process to let your division's biggest rival into the fucking playoffs when you could just beat their ass.
Sometimes that's happened in soccer before, and that's now why the World Cup, the last stage of group play, is always played simultaneously. So you don't, you know.
That's why soccer is soccer and football is football, baby. Let the Europeans do whatever the fuck they want. Right. We're gonna play real man sport.
So much easier to tie in soccer on purpose, too.
Exactly.
So much easier. Anyway. Chris, you're in my team, both won, and it did nothing but hurt our teams. Your team beat the Packers, which is always a nice little feather in the cap, but you lost the number one pick. My team beat the Bengals, swept the Bengals, which is usually a nice thing, but now plays a third place schedule instead of a dumpy fourth place. So that's great. But Eddie, the Bears are going to fire Matt. You just look so chipper today. You look so happy.
It's a good day. It's a half good day, though. Like I said, there's so many layers with this stupid team where it's like, I don't like, there's reports that our GM, Brian Pace, is going to stay, and our owner and our head of, you know, whatever the fuck Ted Phillips is, he stinks too. So it's, we'll see. It's, but it is half full today.
I'm, like I said, I'm happy for you. Just, you have a look on your face that, not that I've seen in a while, just, it's a nice look.
I also want to say I disagree with Ken Jack. He said the Neil off is bad for business. I think if someone texted you and said there was a Neil off going on, people would run to TVs.
Yeah,
it would be like a presidential fucking announcement.
Mm-hmm. So here's the thing. The game would be significantly shorter. So like the amount of commercials cut out of the game would be insane. And yeah. Not to mention people like they'd give you like, yeah, this is a really interesting novelty for the first like two Neil off possessions. And they'd be like, oh, this kind of fucking sucks. And then they tune out.
Yeah, Neiloff is one of those things that sounds much more like, I feel like that happens down then in sports where like it's like a toilet bowl type game where you're like, oh, this is fucking exhilarating. And you watch 5 minutes, you're like, oh my god, this sucks.
Yeah,
this blows. Shout out to anyone who's an Alabama or Georgia fan. Good luck, I guess. In the actually, I don't give a shit. Good luck to Alabama yeah. fans. I'm not wishing you any luck. Georgia fans, good luck to you. Most, I'm sure, Braves fans though. So I can't say I have like an overarching amount of sympathy for you if Georgia loses. But if you're a non-Braves Georgia fan, then I wish you ample amounts of luck and good fortunes in the national title game. Other things, randomly though, if you're in Chicago, Barstool's a bar in Chicago now. So that's cool. Eddie, you were just at a bar all weekend. You're happy you're just not drinking right now. Cool bar though.
I know. I'm just happy to be on my couch. It's been exhausting, but it's fun. It's a good spot. Go check it out, River North. But yeah, I just, you know, you can't do the back to backs, let alone 3 and 4 days. You know, it's just, it's impossible now.
Yeah, me especially, way past the age of where like even when you try, you just feel like a dead human when
yep.
try to go out too many times. So shout out to that. If you're in Chicago, check that out. Let's look at movie news. We're actually going to talk a little movie theater stuff too. Eddie's got two new AMC complaints, apparently.
Ooh,
which is usually it's you usually have, we'll have one, but two locked and loaded. So we'll get to that at the end of news here. First up, as always, check out on Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. We do a Book of Boba Fett recap on Twitter Spaces. It gets reposted as well. We loved the last episode. It was fucking awesome. Awesome train heist western episode, so check that out. You can go to our Twitter and check, listen to the recording on that. We had AJ from Hollow Net Marauders Star Wars podcast YouTube channel as well. He had a great breakdown of some of the new characters, so check that out. Big movie news, I guess this is big news. Morbius with Jared Leto, the new Sony Spider-Man universe Marvel movie. It has Michael Keaton in it from the MCU. There's this rumor that I don't believe, that the delay means they're going to insert an Andrew Garfield Spider-Man cameo. It isn't the most ridiculous concept in the world. Like if you told me that is happening, I'd be like, okay, that makes sense. I'm not sure that's why they're delaying it, but this movie is once again delayed. And once again, my interest just continues to drop for this movie. I don't know.
My one note is that the coolest thing about a movie that I know Chris has a lot of reverence for, Venom 2, Let There Be Carnage. The coolest thing about that movie was the post-credit. So if they were to introduce him, like a post-credit with Andrew Garfield into this one, it might end up being the best part of the movie just the same.
Yeah, I didn't stay for the post-credit in Venom 2.
Well, you hated it so much, I'm not shocked.
Yeah, I floored out of the theater. Oh, no, I know what it was. Yeah, I was linking it to Spider-Man. Look, I... I know how people view my perception of movies. I genuinely come into every movie hoping it's good. I want even the like the worst reviewed movies, I want them to be good. I want to enjoy what I'm seeing. I would be stunned if this is a good movie.
Right.
I would be stunned if it's anything other than like absolute garbage. Wasn't this thing supposed to come out? It's been delayed, what, six? Like, I'm not even kidding, like 6 or 7 times now?
Yeah, the only thing that sort of gives me an interesting pause is that a movie moving out of January.
That's true.
It's different if it moves in. If a movie moves into January, oh no. Like that's 9 out of 10 times, it is just the worst sign possible. Let's see. Let's look at Morbius.
Where was it before January, though?
July 10th, 2020.
Okay.
Then July 31st, 2020. Then March 19th, 2021. Then October 8th, 2021. Then January 21st, 2022. Then January 28th, 2022. And now it's April 2022, which actually doesn't even have a date yet.
Hey, here's my prediction about that, is that Sony made a movie and they have absolutely no idea how to connect it to the other parts of this universe. Do you guys remember when the first Amazing Spider-Man came out and there was that scene at the end in the credits of the dude in the hat? And then they asked Sony who was that, and they literally said, "We don't know. We made him up."
Yeah.
I think this is going to be an entire movie of that, where I think they made a film without any knowledge. Like, say what you will about the MCU, they have their ducks in a row. They know what connects to what. Everything links to the other. I think they made a movie that has no connection to anything, and now they're backtracking, probably reshooting stuff and trying to figure out, because in large part because of the success of No Way Home. So, look, I hope it's good. I hope I'm wrong, but this is it's been delayed a million times. Like, just release the movie, please, and let us know it sucks. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm curious to see what Eddie thinks about Morbius the Living Vampire. I know he's pumped up for that.
I'm more curious to you guys. Are you like on screen only? Are you like Jared Leto? Are you guys?
We have Jared Leto fatigue. We've noted it.
I didn't hate him in Gucci, but for the most part, it's just like it's. I think it's hard with Leto to not let the off screen bleed into the on screen.
Yeah.
I think he's broken through that fourth wall, or like, you know, like Kanye is always like the A1 example, right? I mean, for some people, I guess, I don't know, because they start getting political on it. Kanye's got to really do something to like give a shit about his, like, to not care about his music. Like, I'm like, that is such an easy separation, but they're just so, and which is funny because like his stuff is so much more controversial than Leto, which it, like Leto's just so annoying. Like,
if Kanye was rapping about politics, it would be different. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. Jared Leto, like all of his weird isms involve his acting. So like, that's why I think they bleed into each other right. So much more. Right.
Right, we're like, yeah, and even like Kanye stuff, like, I don't know, like, doesn't bother me. It's like, some of it's like, oh, well, whatever. It's like, what are you doing here? Even like, not even the political stuff, just like some of the weird shit that he does. Right. But the Leto thing, like, it's just, the stuff's annoying. It's like the fucking olive oil and the ice cream or whatever he does. It's just like, ah, come, dude.
You've heard that, right, Eddie?
No, I just, oh. No.
He played Mark David Chapman in a movie once, you know, the guy who killed John Lennon? And yes. That guy's a heavier guy. So to play him, Jared Leto, for nothing, for I think 3 months or something like that, he ate ice cream that he melted down in the microwave with olive oil, and he mixed it up and just ate it. Ugh. He ate nothing but that for like 2 months. He gained like 80 pounds and got gout. And the movie bombed. It made like, I think, $100,000, and then no one saw it.
Wow.
This makes no sense, this comparison I'm about to make. I understand that. But I think it makes sense at the same time. This is like Jared Leto is like, he ruins it in a way like the Trae Young rule ruined the NBA, where it's like you can just lean into a defender and just get a 3 free throws. Like it breaks down that wall of like annoyance, where it's like, yeah, it's good, but it's like, just like, yeah, whatever, your method acting is cool and you're good and you get Oscars, but fuck you. It's like, at the same time, like, go fuck yourself, sending like your dead rats and shit to Will Smith and eating your ice cream and getting gout. Like, you're just, We got a Trae Young rule method acting. Like, you shouldn't like, there should be things you're not allowed to do anymore to claim you're a method actor. It's just too much.
And not to mention, I didn't realize this till well after I saw House of Gucci, but the character he played in that movie in real life wasn't fat. He decided to play a fat guy because he could. Like, I was amazed. I think Tom Segura did a bit on his podcast where they talked about that. Or no, maybe no, maybe it was the Weekly Planet who did a bit on that, where they were like, this guy was a, like a relatively in shape guy, and Jared Leto chose to be in fat face because I don't know, acting or some shit. Just a weird dude.
Needs the attention.
Yeah.
Wait, so Morbius is like a, it's like a weird like character, right?
The vampire doctor guy, I guess.
Okay. Now it, Sony didn't make Joker, right?
No.
No,
that was Warner Brothers.
This is, and even that's a good question. Even for those who maybe don't even aren't huge. I mean, most of our listeners are comic book fans, but this is in the Spider-Man. There's a lot of questions here because how much does the Spider-Man Sony, because Marvel Sony universe is the Spider-Man universe. How much does that truly cross into the MCU? It does a little bit, but now we don't know how much. Like, is it a full cross? Michael Keaton's Vulture is in this movie, but is it like a variant? Is it like a different version of it? So there's a lot of questions that I think that we will get answered. There's a lot.
They
of
have
questions.
They. I'm telling you, dude, they have no idea. I do not think there's a roadmap.
Yeah,
for this.
I think that's a good thing.
It doesn't help too that people like Tyrese Gibson just keep saying like, yeah, we're in the MCU. Like he's in the movie. And like, right. Then Marvel people have to be like, nope, they're not in the MCU. Not at all. even the actors don't know.
It's like, I'm not sure you actually know that, my friend. That is Morbius. Moving on. Chris Evans cast as Gene Kelly in an upcoming film from John Logan. Someone's about a 12-year-old, but he's also producing. 12-year-old boy who works the MGM lot in 1952 and begins to create an imagined friendship with the legendary movie star Kelly while working on his next film. I imagine it's like Chris Evans playing Gene Kelly, not the 12-year-old boy, obviously. Old Hollywood. I do love an old. Yeah, everyone knows I love an old Hollywood movie. Eat that shit right up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of interesting. It's Jojo Rabbit 2, except instead of a Nazi, it's renowned asshole Gene Kelly, who was everyone like not as hated as Hitler, but many people didn't know that Gene Kelly was a huge dickhead.
Oh, this also though, Chris, this is Chris Evans, maybe Oscar territory here. This is an Oscar play for sure.
No, I agree. And I think that's why it's appealing to him, because I remember watching Knives Out and thinking, my guess is after Captain America, Chris Evans said, I want you to give me roles where I play the opposite of Steve Rogers. So in Knives Out, he played this complete prick and he was great, right? He was really, really good in that. I think this is an excellent role for him. I mean, I don't know how much it's going to dive into, you know, it's not a musical, obviously, how much it's going to dive into the singing and dancing stuff. I know Chris Evans comes from, I think, a musical theater background or has played musical theater characters in the past. What's interesting to me going forward, like you have, I always refer to it as like a band in their prime going on tour with those original Avengers, with him and Hemsworth and Downey and Ruffalo and Scarlett Johansson. I'm very interested in where all their careers are going to go post Avengers. And I think that Chris Evans, well, he's only showed it sparingly, has the ability to have a lot of range as an actor. Snowpiercer. He's excellent in Snowpiercer. And he's been good in other stuff. It's just, I'm not going to say he's been held down. The guy's been, you know, one of the biggest movie stars in the world. But like, you have a type when you play Steve Rogers that maybe you're not able to stretch as an actor the way you'd want. So I'm really excited for him because I do think he's really talented. I've seen him give really good performances, not Marvel stuff, because those are usually good, in maybe not so good movies. There was that really, man, nobody remembers this. You guys remember that really shitty movie Street Kings from 2008 with Keanu Reeves? Like he had a small part in that and he was good. Like I think there's another level to him as an actor that I'm really excited to see. So yeah, I mean, to me, perfect casting, but I want to see what the story looks like. Do we know who's directing this, by the way?
I don't think
I didn't see anything about who was directing.
I didn't see either. Yeah.
Get Archie Yates in there. Let him play the kid. I feel like he just fits in.
He needs that it's going to be written by John Logan. That's it.
Okay. Archie Yates needs a palate cleanser after that garbage Home Alone movie.
Oh my God. Man, Did you watch the Home Alone stunk. Movie, Eddie?
No, I've heard enough about it that I was like, I can't do it.
It's offensive.
I just couldn't do it.
It's offensively bad.
Yeah. Very bad.
Warner Media and Viacom exploring a sale of the CW. Oh no. The network has never turned a profit since its inception in 2006. That's typically a good sign to get rid of it. But I mean, let's look at the CW shows.
They're not all bad. People like to shit on the CW. They have good DC shows, for whatever that's
right.
Worth.
The CW is typically like, I feel like that's a show, like a network when people want to bring up a network to make fun of. Like it's like, oh, it's on the fucking CW, right? Like when they want to slander, they got, what do you got? You got Riverdale.
The highs and lows of high school football.
You got that new, isn't that show like a new, what is that? Yeah, it's like a Walker Texas Rangers spinoff, right? Walker?
Yeah. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. They got that show. It's been on for a little while. Obviously the DC shows Flash. What else?
Batwoman.
They did Superman Arrow. And Lois, right? Which I've heard is really quite good.
Yeah, Superman and Lois.
Yeah.
And One Tree Hill. It's got to bring Chad Michael Murray back.
Right.
And get Charmed back too.
God, what are some other ones they have here? A lot of them are just not sticking out as much as I thought they used to.
They did Green Arrow, right? When I was on.
Yeah, Green Arrow was solid.
Yeah. Oh, Fool Us with Penn and Teller. Good show. Cool show. Good YouTube show. Good show to watch on YouTube is Clips.
That's simply not good for a TV network.
Yeah, that might be why. they have not turned a profit. I don't know, though. Like, I don't really know. Oh, Gilmore Girls, Smallville, Supernatural, Veronica Mars, Seventh Heaven. Right.
Gossip Girl. How did they never turn a profit? I feel like some of those were pretty big.
Gossip Girl was huge.
Yeah.
Those were also old shows, too. I mean, in the last 10 Gossip years, Girl. I don't know how successful they've been.
90210. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the older ones, as now I pull up the list.
SmackDown.
I really am not anything with, like, the CW has never really been anything I've watched.
Yeah, I mean, I've watched some of the CW shows, but like not on the CW, on like secondhand on streaming platforms and stuff. And like some of the DC ones are good. Some of them are very bad. Like the one scene I always bring up is the one from Legend of Tomorrow, where they send a gorilla back in time to kill Obama. And it's very, every time I see the picture, it just makes me crack up. Have you ever seen this before, Chris?
No. What are you talking?
I'm going to DM it to you right now. It's one of the funniest scenes in TV history. There's a scene that they have this guy, Gorilla Grodd. He goes back in time in order to murder Obama in order to disrupt the timeline or something. And it's earnestly one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my entire life. But yeah, I mean, they have some good stuff. And then there's like a very loyal following to some of those shows, too. So.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe they'll find like new life on a different. Actually, I assume they probably will find a new life on somewhere else.
Yeah, I think they needed more Barack Obama being hunted by a gorilla.
Yes,
type of storyline.
They should have really dug into that. I feel like,
yeah, like those are the type of storylines the CW probably could have thrived on. Like, imagine another just Eddie, like fucking, I don't know. Godzilla going after Lori Lightfoot or something. I don't know. Just something really, really diverse and unique. The when you think of what did I see? Somebody said the other day to me, who doesn't know a ton of TV stuff, like what's WGN? I'm like, oh
wow.
God, it's a legend. That's that guy. You hear WGN. It's the most Chicago ass channel of all. The CW for me, that's the thing. It's like you said, Ken Jack, so many people like a lot of their shows, but it's always in this weird, almost like limbo of success or how people talk about it. Like, not even like the, you know, like the TNT and TBS dramas, those feel the same way, but they have like a more of an impact because they're not quite as niche, like Suits.
Oh, you're talking USA Network, baby.
USA, right? USA Network. Yes. Like Suits and all that shit. Yeah.
It's like, feels like they have like a similar level of production quality, but like they're perceived a little bit different because I think like when you look at Suits or any, but whatever, one of my favorites, Burn Notice, for example, like they're like adult or teeny shows for adults, where the CW shows feel more based for teens, if that makes sense. And maybe that's why there's like that different perceptions. Like, it's like, hey, this is like a teen drama channel or something like that, which isn't necessarily the case. So.
Yeah. The production quality of the CW stuff does feel exactly like USA, but the USA stuff just held such a high. Maybe because USA stuff is previewed before movies.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe because I see Burn Notice along with Maria Menounos.
Just feels like a mid-major.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. They are there. They are that is very true. Okay. That is very true. CW is like more like a 15-16 seed, though. USA shows are more like 12-13 seeds.
Yeah.
So that's a good comp. Scott Pilgrim anime series in the work in Netflix. That's actually pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm. I don't know a ton about the original comic, but I did really, really like the movie for whatever that's worth. And also I'm a little, I wouldn't say hesitant, but I would say a little bit maybe a little bit hesitant, because I think that Edgar Wright style is so specific, and that's such a hard thing to try and replicate, and I don't think they would try to replicate it. So we'd probably be seeing a very different version of Scott Pilgrim in this versus what we saw in the movies.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's also worth knowing, and I like the movie quite a bit too. I don't view it as a religious experience. There is, that movie has like a ridiculous cult following of people who not just think it's great, think it's like one of the best movies of the last like 30 years. Like legitimately, there's people who believe that it's Edgar Wright's masterpiece. I think it's really good. But it also bombed bad. And I think because of that, and I only bring that up because I think it will allow for whatever series gets made going forward to have complete creative control over who's in charge. Like, I don't think mainstream wise, I'm not talking, you know, the cult following, mainstream wise, there's not that much of a connection to it. So my guess is there will be, it'll be wholly its own thing. And Edgar Wright's busy, dude. I mean, he's doing his own stuff, making other movies. So, yeah, I mean, it's intriguing. I'll watch it. I mean, I do think I don't mean to knock, I do like that movie a lot. And it was disappointing that when that came out in 2010, it never got the fair shake that it deserved. It opened, I don't know, just opened at a weird time. And while it got incredible reviews, never got the you know, the mainstream reception that it probably deserved. So, I mean, at worst, this will allow more people to go back and watch the original film and realize how much fun it actually was.
Have you done Scott Pilgrim, Eddie?
No, hearing Chris say that, though. Yeah, you just like, you know, that was a nice public service announcement, Chris, because now I want to see it.
Yeah, that's quite good.
Very stylistic, very music based. I think you might enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Chris Evans banger, too.
Yes. Yeah. The style
a ton of people before they were famous. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Quinto, Brie Larson,
Aubrey Plaza, Anna Kendrick.
Yeah. Wait, and who's his who plays Ramona? Oh, my gosh. It's
Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
I almost just said Mary Tyler Moore.
Who had been in stuff before, but that was like a big. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy to think about.
It's very stylized to look like a comic book. And it's one of the few that have tried that and have been very successful. Yeah.
Shout out Ang Lee's Hulk.
Yeah. Ang Lee's Hulk, yes. Man. He tried. He tried. You got to give him credit. He absolutely tried. It just didn't work, though. Moving on. The Boys, announcement, teaser, June 3rd. Ken Jack, excitement level for The Boys?
Oh, huge. I think I responded to our own account when we tweeted it. It's just saying, like, it's sort of insane, like, how, like, and this isn't a knock against any of the MCU shows at all. Like, they all have, like, these crazy tie-ins through all the movies and all this stuff and, like, decades of like investment in all these characters that they built up, and like those shows are solid, but then The Boys and Invincible are like two of the best superhero shows like ever made. And then they had no previous tie into almost anything anyone's ever seen before, definitely on screen, and barely, I would say, even a fraction amount have read compared to the stuff in Marvel. So for them to be as successful as they are, I think is a huge credit to the people who are the minds behind making both of those series. And I'm really, really hyped up for The Boys. I think season two is a little bit, no, it wasn't as sharp as season one, but I think they'll get back to the higher plane that they were on season one. Yeah, I think you guys would like it. Very easy to pick up on for someone, even if you're not big in the superhero world, very easy to watch.
This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy. We talk about BetterHelp a lot on this show and just mental health and all of that. And this month, we're discussing some of the stigmas around mental health. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. Much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. Give it a try. See why over 2 million people have used BetterHelp online therapy. For example, some people, you know, they think about waiting for things to become unbearable or things to get bad before they want to do therapy and all that. That's not the way to do it. Therapy is a tool to utilize before things get worse. Help you avoid those lows. And again, the best thing about BetterHelp is that you don't got to go and see anybody in person. I know that's a big, for me, big barrier. It's why I didn't do therapy for years, and why I do it now is because this is an easier way to do it. It's much better. We've been taught that mental health shouldn't be a part of normal life, but that's wrong too. We take care of our bodies in many different ways. Got to take care of the mind as well. Very, very important. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and you get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/lights. That's betterhelp.com/lights.
Last bit of news, the legendary Sidney Poitier has passed away, unfortunately. Age of, I think, I want to say 94. Was that what it was?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Age of 94. First ever Black actor to win Best Actor at the Oscars. Then won an honorary one. I definitely, check out that Oscars when you got the honorary Oscar. He also, there was a nice little back and forth between him and Denzel Washington, but it's 2 weeks in a row. Another legend in entertainment has sadly passed away this time to start off 2022. So hopefully the Oscars get a really nice tribute to him. That'd be a very cool thing to see. An absolute icon, trailblazer. Mm-hmm. So rest in peace to him. And movie theater discussion now to end this section of the pod. We'll start with this. There was a viral video the other day. A viral video of, I don't even know what theater chain it was. I couldn't figure out what theater chain. It looked like a California chain. What are those? What's that one that everyone fucking likes? There's got one in California. In
California?
Not Cinemark? Landmark.
No, what the fuck am I talking about? Cinemark, right?
No.
Marcus?
No, it's fucking... Oh, my God. People are screaming right now.
Wait, Cinemark's not West Coast.
Arclight.
Oh, fucking yeah, Arclight. Damn it.
Yeah, there's one in Chicago, right?
Yes, there is. It might have just closed, but I know there is.
Yeah, they are. They are very much struggling to keep open. I couldn't tell. It looked like a California one. I'll get the name in a second, which one I thought it was. But they were showing off self-serve popcorn machines like you get with soda.
Dude, people were sucking this thing's dick. I think this is going to be a disaster.
You think it's a no-go? You think it's a bad idea?
Yeah, it's not a gumball. It doesn't come out like one straight shot or like one loopy loop. People are gonna be sitting there. It's basically the hotel ice machine, you know, like it's not gonna be fast, and people are gonna be like real fucking picky about putting their butter on this part. I think it's a disaster.
Oh, see, that's the big issue. They're gonna get a little bit, they're gonna go over the butter, do a little butter, get a little more, go over. That is a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the butter was right next to it, which is good, which is smart by them. But I still think like people don't appreciate the fact that these movie theater workers are just scooping and scoring, you know? And I think there's something to be said for that.
Yeah, I feel like you're right in that. Like, I think the machine is just, how is it not jam and constantly malfunction? Number one, like that has disaster mechanically written all over it. But like the thought process of getting no matter what fresh popcorn on demand and like free refills on your own request is a cool idea. Like if you could see the fucking kernels coming out and being popped right in front of you as like they come down to shoot and they pop as they come into your thing, like the technology is just not there yet. I'm sorry. We're focused on more important stuff, but like that would be so cool because there's almost nothing worse than getting stale popcorn from like some poor regular concession stand worker who's just like doing his job, but like they're not going to make fresh popcorn just for you. So like they end up having to give you a stale bunch, and that stinks.
I don't have much on this.
You're forced to have a take here. What's that? You have your own theater chain. Do you open one or do you not?
No, because I'm waiting for somebody else to see how it works. And then if it works for them, I'm opening it because I think that to be the first is so ballsy. And if it falls apart, then you're going to have egg on your face and look like an idiot. I'm waiting for somebody. I want to see how it works. You're right. Like, ideally, I could completely understand why they think this is a good idea. But having, like, worked in the service industry and worked at a gas station and have single-handedly witnessed the incompetence of human beings, I know that this is not probably going to go well. Like, I just know, like, I know there's going to be, assuming, and this is without the, you know, thought of the fact that it's probably going to break down. There's probably going to be some sort of, you know, mechanical disaster, but people's impatience cannot be underestimated here. It, like you brought up the ice machine at the hotel. It's the exact same way. If people can't do 100% of what they're going for, it's going to be a mess. So I would wait. I hope it works. Cause I think like conceptually it's kind of a neat idea, but yeah, I don't know, man. I think I guarantee you in 2-3 months, we're going to hear some stories about, there was a fist fight at the, you know, so-and-so cinema because a guy couldn't get his popcorn, and then it'll be a viral video, which will be funny for sure, but will also, lend credence to our theory that this may not go very well.
Once this starts going down like McDonald's milkshake machine, then you got a problem. Like that is where the, like, you need the backup. And if you have the backup popcorn counter, then what is kind of the point of having? So then, because I mean, walking into a theater and hearing their popcorn machine is down, that's bad.
However, I will say this. They may have just saved themselves. Whoever knows how much longer, if they were in the brink of, you know, getting the boot or losing business, because
it's true.
Everyone's going to at least get this once. And that's going to make sales go up a little bit. Right.
That's true.
Roll dice on it. Yeah, that's true.
Regal owns a chain. Regal own Edwards movie theaters in California. And I think it's Edwards. I think I could be wrong on that. But yeah, self-serve popcorn. Eddie, AMC though, you got two AMC based complaints.
Well, all right. One's a little lighter. I've always come out here and I don't, you know, I miss Trill, but he was never sensitive to my issues I had with AMC. So I'm happy Chris is here instead.
I'm here for you, buddy. Yeah.
I appreciate it. So one, is there a cheese shortage? Have you guys experienced this?
No, I've seen mostly stock cheese, but I feel like we're in a different scenario, at least in New York.
Maybe, but so every place I've gone to, I think three different ones, and they've all been out of cheese.
What type of wait? So
like for the pretzel bites.
So like they just told you like after the fact, after they gave you the pretzel, sorry, fuck you, we have no cheese. Yes,
after the fact, and you can't get those without cheese, right?
No, you can't eat that dry, dude. You choke to death.
That's what I'm saying. So it's like, their lifeblood is the concessions. How do you not find a different cheese supplier for like the meantime? I don't know. And it was like an early show. It wasn't like, oh, we're at the end of the night. Yeah. And it was upsetting.
Did they explain why there was, or was the reason just COVID?
I think they said it was a supply chain issue. It wasn't we're out today.
I sympathize with you, because when I was at the gas station, during COVID, the heart of COVID, we had shortages on everything. We had at different points, a nuts, a pop, a coffee, there was never a gas shortage, but like, you know, an aluminum shortage on every, and like eventually it just got to a point where the boss just said, if anybody asks, just say COVID. I don't know what exactly is the reason for why I think it's just that when you have a supplier and you have fewer employees who are willing to work because of COVID, just corners get cut, which is bullshit. And the fact they didn't tell you up front makes it infuriating, because you wouldn't have bought the thing if they didn't have cheese.
Right? Oh, no, not at all. You can't. So
you're holding the thing. Yeah.
Yeah. You're raw dogging these raw pretzel nuggets, you know? So that's a minor one. I'm sure that'll be fixed at some time. But my second one was, and you guys may have talked about this, and, I'm not an asshole, and I'll listen if you tell me, hey, this is good for the planet and, you know, we should do this. And I think you know where I'm going to go here, but paper straws at the movies are tough.
No, I can't do it.
Yeah, not
can't
good.
Do it. With you.
Have you guys experienced this yet?
Think about when a paper straw goes bad, that's the last place you need to be to go get a new one.
Exactly, man. Exactly. Have you guys experienced this yet?
Yes.
Mm, yeah.
And they I think they did away with it at AMC. I think they stopped, at least my AMC stopped doing it.
And they also claim that. So you could be honest something, Chris, because we asked like, oh, is there like, you know, did you guys like switch permanently? And they're like, oh no, we just can't get plastic straws because of COVID. So
right. That's the go-to, because you're never going to question that. You're just going to say, oh, I get, you know, it's bad. And it's, you know, it's been pretty fucked up, isn't it?
That's such a good excuse for a business. Just like,
oh no, it's been perfect. Yeah. No one ever questioned it. Yeah. I guess it's a good point. COVID's been, it's really been a mess. Yeah.
You can charge more. You can just have less to offer, like everything you want. You just say, yeah, sorry, COVID.
What is the shelf life on paper straws? Like if you see a 2.5 hour movie, second hour, is that thing toast?
My friend sent me a picture of his the other day. I think he was seeing, I forgot what he saw, but half hour in, it was shredded to
Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's just brutal, dude. And like, it's so funny, because like they obviously made such a big deal about paper straws and all that stuff too. But like, it contributes, the plastic straws contribute so little to the recycling. Yes. It's insane. Like, it makes difference compared to like the amount of pollution caused by like corporations and like factories, all this shit. It is so minuscule, but it is so damaging to like your theater experience. It's crazy.
Yeah. And here's the thing.
That's the thing. People, like you said, that people don't realize it now. So like, you always sound like an asshole when you complain about them. But like, if people really knew the facts, like you just said, Ken Jack, and I think more people are, you're like, hey, this is not that big of a deal. We could still have these, but you know,
mm-hmm.
I digress.
There's one local movie theater I go to that when you buy a drink, they give you a paper straw But if you walk 10 feet, there's a receptacle of plastic straws, which is basically them saying, yeah, we know these things suck. Like, just yeah. if you want to, you can go and get the plastic one. Like, they're not even pretending to hide behind the whole yay environment. Like, yeah, here you go. Take
PR move, man.
Yeah, basically.
They know it.
And it's got to be. I mean, I was thinking, can you ask for a Slurpee straw? Like, is that just the move now? You'll just do it with a little scooper on it. I mean, that could be the move.
Ooh, that'd be good too, because it would shield you against the ice chunks getting sucked into the straw. Yeah, that's kind of smart. I like that.
Yeah,
maybe.
The self serve is at a Santikos Entertainment Center outside of San Antonio. By the way, they got bowling alley, arcade, laser tag. So, if you're in San Antonio, get that self serve popcorn. Also, adding to the cheese thing too, I will say, with all the supply chain issues there are, I mean, AMC, a couple items just routinely off the menu. However, the one thing that remains is the Bavarian Legend.
Mm-hmm. The king. Bavarian, the king of pretzels.
The Bavarian ain't going anywhere. The king of the pretzels. A fucking 3 pounds of fun, as they say.
Mm-hmm. And eating that thing dry. I feel bad for you, Eddie, even thinking about it.
Shareable fun, 3 pounds.
You'll choke. You're dead. You eat that thing dry.
We're going to talk Beanie Mania. Documentary on HBO Max documents the craze of Beanie Babies. No interview with the creator, Ty Warner. Very few humans have ever interviewed this man. The tax evader himself was convicted of tax evasion, did community service, probation. But the mastermind behind one of the craziest collector / toy things. If you were alive and remember this time, it was chaos. It was complete fucking craziness. And we'll talk about some of the elements in this. I don't need a rating or anything, but let's get everyone's kind of base level Beanie Baby connection. I'm the oldest here. I believe, right, Eddie?
How old are you?
I'm 30.
I'm 31. I'm the oldest.
I thought I was older than you by a year. Okay.
I just turned 31 in October. So
you and I for sure were in that. Chris, where are you with Beanie Babies?
I'm aware of their historical relevance.
Okay. So were you surprised by things in the documentary?
I'm not surprised by anything anymore. People don't surprise me.
I think they undersold a major part of this documentary.
Ooh, which part was that?
The McDonald's Beanie Baby part of the documentary.
They did talk about it. Yeah.
They undersold the key element that was happening there. And I was surprised by it. Ken Jack, where are you with Beanie Babies?
They were like in my periphery, I would say, like when I was growing up, because I didn't have sisters. I had two younger brothers. Like, we just played with G.I. Joes and Army shit. But like, I remember getting one of the Beanie Baby McDonald's toys, and then I bought a Beanie Baby after the fact with that, just because I was like, oh, this is fun little stupid doll. And like, I remember that was like basically the extent of my knowledge of it. Then my girl cousins, they all like loved them. They're obsessed with them, and they had a whole bunch of them. And I was like, why the fuck are people so obsessed with this? And I didn't realize until years later that like, it was a beyond a kid thing. And it was like a huge collector's sort of deal. And like, I was honestly surprised by a lot of stuff in this documentary, because I didn't even know the extent of like how far it went into like even more intense than like Star Wars toys or like with Kenner stuff or anything like that. It's crazy.
It was like hysteria beyond belief. And it's one of those things too. It's like, if you were involved in the purchasing of Beanie Babies, saving them, like my family has a ton of boxes of these still. We have a couple like really, really old original ones with the tags on it. We have, I think, we have two of each McDonald's Beanie Baby in the bag still too. Wow. So we got wrapped up in it. That definitely broke my mother's spirit. I'm not sure she could ever do something like that again. But it's just one of those things. Like, it was very hard to not be a family that had a mild connection to it, at least one or two, because especially if you're our age and you're a kid and you saw toys, you wanted toys. I mean, I went to places like the craziness of the lines, like, and it's also true. They only sold out of small stores. And that was
which is unbelievable. Which is unbelievable.
They never sold out of Toys R Us. And it's one of the things you forget about. And you're like, damn, that's right. And like, the place that I would get Beanie Babies, a place called the Little Blue Barn in Plainville, Connecticut. And most of these places like don't have like the ability to really control a store when there's a ton of just women and their children attacking for Beanie Babies. There was a massive fight once when I was there. We didn't get in. They did like a lottery. They drew numbers and everything. It was complete fucking chaos. But it all started, Eddie, and this is a funny connection to Trill. Trill used to always talk about Naperville, mm-hmm. Illinois. Oh,
and they did the thing that he always complained the most about, which is them not calling it Naperville. I'm just saying, I'm from the Chicago area. That's like one of his favorite things that people always do.
These women in Naperville, they started this. They started the trend. And I'll tell you what, if you were a Beanie Baby collector, and I guess it's something that like I should have known, but it's never dawned on me until I watched this. But I had these fucking guides. I had these magazines. Imagine going back in time and telling your younger self, like, Eddie, you too. It's like, Eddie, there's a couple of these women a few blocks away or like 30-minute drive away who are making up these fucking guides, these price guides. They're just making up the fucking prices.
The whole thing.
That was like, again, it's one of those things. I don't know if you agree with me. One of the things like I should have known, I'm 30 now, but it's never like I've never thought about it enough because like Beanie Babies haven't really popped up that much. But now you think it, you're like, God damn.
I mean, it's the two things I thought of when it comes to that is obviously like it reminded me of the cards, what happened with, you know, baseball cards and whatever. And, you know, those things were mass produced. So like Ty Warner was so smart. Like he did a lot of things like very strategic and very much of a way that people would collect these things and like at least equate of a sense of worth on them. So that I think of the NFT thing, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. I don't know what the hell is worth anything anymore. Like nothing makes sense to me anymore. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's really even weirder. I think the fact that like they obviously the women who made these guides and all that stuff, they didn't work for Ty Warner. They just like, they just decided it. They're consumers just like everyone else. And they just told everybody what it's worth. And they just were like, yeah, sure. Why not? And that is, I think, the craziest part about this whole thing is like essentially all these people inventing their own stock market out of Beanie Babies. And except instead of like the market telling you what it is, it's just these like four women in Naperville telling you how much the everything's worth. That's crazy.
That's the other thing too, is that it's they got sued for making the magazines because they put their name on it. Yeah. Just fucking insane.
And one of the big debates we had in our office was we came away asking, was Ty Warner a good guy or a bad guy?
Bad dude, which is funny because almost everyone in the documentary painted him as a bad dude.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I know you guys talk about in your podcast, Eddie, his lawyer, real scumbag.
Oh, that guy was brutal. That guy was brutal.
That guy was just major scumbag energy.
But here's the thing, though, Jeff. Like you said, the tax thing, like, I just assume all rich people do that shady kind of shit, right? Like, that's assumed. I get that. And you know, Dante brought up the great point on our show. He's like, well, you know, the small business thing, like, he probably kept so many of these businesses, like, afloat till, like, 2008 knocked him out. You know, there was definitely a boom that he helped out these small businesses in a way that, you know, doesn't really happen. And where he got me, what turned him away from me was when he wouldn't pay the lady who wrote a million poems in like 18 hours.
I agree. Mm-hmm. That's what it was for me too, is it wasn't as much the tax thing. Like, I mean, yeah, it sucks. Like, but whatever, like it doesn't bother me. What bothered me was just the fact that these people who like worked their fucking ass off this company, and he went into the meeting, he's like, I've never been in there with so many millionaires for, like, he just said so many things that you're like, ah, man, this guy kind of sucks. This guy's kind of an asshole.
But then he doubled their salary as a bonus, remember? And then the next year he gave him a fucking $1 billion. What the hell was that?
The employee bear, the billionaire bear.
Exactly.
That is, imagine having your salary doubled and then the next year you walk in and there's a box on your desk and it's the billionaire bear.
Billionaire bear. It's funny because like when you he first like explained how he like did only work with the smaller retailers and all that. I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, he doesn't want to like he wants to keep these guys like afloat. He wants to work with them. I kind of think after watching or got deeper into it, it was more about him wanting to be on the right side of the power balance there. Right. Like, because if he was working with Toys R Us or KB Toys, whatever else like that, like he would have been like they would have had their thumb on him. And I don't think he wanted that for KB Toys. He wanted to be able to, you know, influence the distribution and influence all that, because like his master plan here of manipulating the pricing of everything and the short and the supplies of everything, it wouldn't have worked if he had signed a contract with Toys R Us or whatever major retailer, because they would have been in control. He also just something about he's got just an evil face. It is like a snake.
They all do.
Yeah,
they all look like they all look. They're all came from the same gene pool. Every one of these guys, him, the Firefest guy, the Class Action Park guy, they're all part of the same genome. I swear to God, every single one of them.
I laughed out loud at the comparison to Willy Wonka, though. Like, he really did have like major Willy Wonka vibes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you bring up a good point, Ken Jack. Like, it makes me wonder, he wanted to control it. What did McDonald's do to get that deal, since he never got him, you know? Like, I know they're both Chicago-based companies. Maybe there was like a personal connection, but what a move by them. That
never
was...
underestimate McDonald's. I mean, never, like people are underestimating McDonald's. But, like, McDonald's has two of the craziest rights deals in the history of merchandising, because they're Disney deal was iconic.
Mm-hmm. What was it again?
They had two different Disney deals, two different Disney Happy Meal deals. You can actually go. There's a good YouTube video, a good YouTube documentary on Disney and McDonald's associations. But then this too. I mean, this was huge. They undersold, and I'll get to that part. I think they grossly undersold how crazy McDonald's were when those fucking toys came out. They made it seem like you could only, and maybe it was like McDonald's. I don't know. Like, maybe they didn't want to expose McDonald's franchises in the doc. I vividly remember people paying just for the Beanie Babies.
Yeah.
Like, not right. Like, not just, they were like, oh yeah, they went in and they bought, they weren't buying Happy Meals. They went and they bought the Beanie Babies. They would just buy the toy, not only not the food with it.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember that. I don't remember the food ever being a barrier for anyone.
Yeah,
it's kind of like, here's $5. Give me the toy.
Like, there's that one person that they referenced in the doc who was like, I had so many, so I ate so much food. Why?
Yeah.
Why are you eating so much food? That was the McDonald's one. Like, there are certain nostalgia points that I just don't think you can properly ever explain to somebody who wasn't alive for something to have them really appreciate it. McDonald's and Beanie Babies is absolutely one of them.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Happy Meal toys don't have the same idea. Like, they don't have the same, like, there's not that same aura that they used to have. Obviously people view McDonald's much differently than they did 25 years ago or whatever. Mm-hmm. Thanks to fucking Morgan Spurlock and his stupid fucking documentary, piece of shit.
Is that what did him in? Do you think? Because you're right.
McDonald's was gravely hurt by supersizing.
That was going to be my next question. Is like, I mean, now McDonald's, I'm sure, is very much lucrative. But you're right. It's like there was a point where I watched a 20-minute video about like the success of Batman Forever essentially hinged on the McDonald's deal. Like the people were going to McDonald's and getting like the Riddler cups and the Batman drinks and the little toys. Mm-hmm. I got to say one thing though about this, because it's weird because we're all like close to the same age, and yet I do feel a little bit of a disconnect here, because like, okay, when I watched the Firefest documentary, I completely understood why somebody would think, oh man, this is so cool. Like, I want to go to this like discreet island, go to this concert. Now, it was the biggest clusterfuck in the history of clusterfucks, which made for an awesome documentary. One of my favorite movies of 2020 was Class Action Park. Now, as stupid as it is, I completely understand why somebody would go to, I'm not one of these people, why someone would go to a theme park knowing they might break their arm or get a concussion. Like, people eat Tide Pods, so that it's not out of the realm of possibility that like people would do something like that. But I was watching this, and people are into what they're into. I don't want to knock anybody, but like, Beanie Babies were a little bit after my time. Were they, they were just like little like toy plushies, right? Like, they didn't talk like you. And yet you had these 50-year-old housewives who treated this as a religion. Like I, and again, it made for a good documentary. I do like this actually quite a bit. I think it's really good. It's not going to like make my top 10, but I was watching it being like, I don't know, if I was a kid back then, even, you know, as a child, I don't know if I would have been like super into these. And many people were. I mean, I'm on the wrong side of history here. Clearly these things, this is a $1 billion industry, but I was like, it became what it became while watching the documentary. Cause it's such a simple idea.
It's a collection thing is a big thing of it.
Completely. Yeah.
I think Funko Pops.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I think a lot of it is a class thing too. You know, I mean, I think you have a kid, you have kids at school. I mean, I had a kid in school who had fucking every single one of them. You're like, God dang. Yeah. You know, you go tell your parents, you know, parents want to do something for their kids, but that also gets a little, you know, it's like you see the women in the documentary, it gets a little competitive in that sense. You know, it's no different than, you know, Little League energy, right? Like it's that same, like my kid's better than your kid thing. I think that because Pokemon, I mean, I never played the Pokemon card game. I just collected the fucking cards. Same, like I didn't play the game. I kind of wish I did.
And how about Chris? Chris is severely discounting the expressive eyes that were just black dots on every Beanie Baby.
There, I mean, and I will say the exclusivity of some of them definitely helped. And there are some that like I remember vividly. Obviously,
I was shocked Princess Diana wasn't worth anything. I was shocked.
There are a couple that are worth money, and I think it's like anything nowadays when you have something that isn't worth anything except for one small part, and it's things that are defective.
Yeah.
It's like if something's upside down or a misprint, like those are the things that are worth a lot. The Princess Diana one comes to mind a lot. The originals come to mind a lot. The like I'm scrolling through Beaniepedia right now. I'm just like absurd fucking flashbacks. Jesus Christ. The dinosaurs were a big one. I tweeted the other day. I had a kid in school back in either second or first grade who said like his pee had all the dinosaurs. Get the fuck out, you know.
You're still mad.
Fucking liar. That kid was such a liar. Piece of shit. I don't remember his name either. That was when I went to a private school, kindergarten, first grade, that my parents like put you in fucking public school like a regular Connecticut. Actually, Connecticut's very well known for private schools. But the other ones were baseball related. I vividly remember. Mm-hmm. Sammy the Cub back during the Maguire Sosa chase. And then you had Mac the Cardinal.
Yep.
Those were big. Man. Also, my uncle, I remember this one. I was jealous of my cousins. My uncle still works for Miller Coors, but worked for Coors his whole life. And he went to Coors Field for the 1998 MLB All-Star Game, and you got a commemorative Beanie Baby with a certificate.
Wow.
Glory.
Wow.
It was like a USA. Like, he got to get two of them. I that was like, it's that type of thing, too. It's like, I didn't hate my cousins over. I'm like, oh, fuck, my cousins got two of them. Because my uncle went to Coors Field and got the two bears. So that is like, it was crazy. It's one of the things, like, I didn't do it. Like, Ken, I don't know, like, our Star Wars toy. Like, I played with my fucking Star Wars toys.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Same.
Like, yeah. I lined up my Beanie Babies in, like, an area of my room. But I didn't, like, you know, with, like, Han Solo and Luke. Like, it is, you're right, Chris. It is a fascinatingly, it's weird because it's collection, but it's, like, I don't know. It is odd. It's an odd thing to look back on.
Yeah, I would like play with my G.I. Joes and my Star Wars toys. I think all my Beanie Babies ended up being dog toys. Like, my dog just shredded all of them. One of them definitely got into the actual, like, the bean things. Got very sick. Puked them all up.
Real quick, though. Was the Princess Diana one controversial when it came out? Because I swear, if that happened today, people would freak out.
Because I think a lot of it was that it would go to her foundation. It was a commemorative.
Oh, okay. Okay. All right. I guess. Yeah. Right,
by the way, I didn't know about the Princess Diana bear. And when they just dropped the Princess Diana footage in the middle of the documentary, I'm like, what the fuck are they talking about? They really threw me for a loop because they were just talking about Beanie Babies. I was like, Princess Diana dead at 39. And I was like, what the fuck? How did we get here? What's the segue?
It really was like that was the one. But that one, see, the funniest thing about that bear is, I don't remember that bear being hard to get. I remember like the new releases being hard to get, like the new regular Beanie Babies. And that's where you go to a place and then sure enough, those are the ones that are worth nothing.
It definitely made like one of the most press for the Princess Banana because that was one of the most known ones, I would say. because of that. And that's a good point, though, Chris. I'm in the minority on this. I understand. But like, I don't know, these brands, and some of them obviously are over the top, but you guys, obviously three big Star Wars guys. Were you super offended when Cinnabon like paid homage to Carrie Fisher with the Cinnabon? I don't know. Like, it's,
oh man, I forgot about that. Oh yeah. My God, this, Eddie. Wow.
That never really offend. I love it.
I don't get it. Like, that's what they're paying. Like, and I get it. People are like, oh, that's how they're trying to sell product. Maybe not. Maybe they're just like, hey, we're just, you know, I don't know.
It's better. Like, it's better than Eternal Poptimist is what I was going to say.
When Fleshlight not commemorates 9/11. Like, those are like,
yeah.
And like, everyone got mad at fucking poor SpaghettiO, who was just planting the flag.
I'm planting the flag on Omaha Beach or whatever. Yeah, that was a great one.
We don't talk enough about SpaghettiO commemorating Pearl Harbor. That one doesn't. You're right. That one gets lost in the shuffle a little too much.
I mean, come on, like, SpaghettiO's just trying to pay respects. Like, what are we doing?
There is an element. There's an element of like innocence to me where, like, you're right, they don't know, but there's also something very funny to me about like the artist like really questioning it.
Yeah.
Hey, Mike. Yeah, can you get the little old guy? Can he be holding an American flag? Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Before he's going to be saying like, "Remember Pearl Harbor."
Should have put him on like the USS Arizona. You sure about
that? You sure you want me to draw that?
There's something I love about failed business promotions of like.
They're funny. Because
especially when we're talking about big companies, that shit has to go through like 40 people. And if one of them says, you know what, maybe having SpaghettiOs honor Pearl Harbor isn't like the best idea. And nobody says no. That's why that shit makes me laugh forever. Because it's just like the amount of hoops that these people have to go through in order for this to be a thing is staggering.
Mm-hmm. We need like the Bounty Bears honoring like the Battle of Fallujah or something like that. Like, yeah, just do make the most absurd compilation you can.
We've talked about making a fake movie. Just don't want to get sued because it would be the funniest fucking thing.
Wait, that's Charmin Bears. Bounty's just the guy in the plaid, the plaid, right? Charmin Bears, man, yes. Yeah.
There are some. 2000 is the last release of Pokemon that I remember. These are the ones, the last ones I remember, like, by name. Talk about a different political climate back in 2000 when they could sell a righty the elephant and a lefty the donkey, Beanie Baby. It's like just like, it's just like a normal thing. Who cares?
Yeah.
Yeah. The Beanie Baby documentary just went a little nostalgia trip.
It was unbelievable. I really enjoyed it. And
those ladies, by the way, were crazy. Yeah. That was like one of those things. Like, you know, you just look in someone's eyes, and like, it's the same thing with Warner. Like, you look in someone's eyes, even in a video or not, and you just look at them, and you're like, they're fucking crazy. They're a crazy person. That was like all these collectors.
Yeah. They all had Karen face. every yes. one of them. Like, I swear I saw them in a viral video like a year and a half ago. Every single one of them at some point. Yeah.
Did you guys? I know you did. We all did, I'm sure. But did you guys do the math on how much she made authenticating those Beanie Babies?
She had about $20 a pop each one. And then how many did she say she did? I forget
exactly, but I know it was like over $3 million.
Jesus. Oh my God. Yeah. And she was so casually bragging about how much money her husband makes, by the way. She was like, yeah, man, my husband collects Porsches and collects Mercedes.
Yeah, she made it seem like that was his like little petty side thing he does.
Yeah, like how we do like Criterion collections. This guy's just collecting fucking Porsches.
The fuck? Yeah. Cool doc, though. Nothing groundbreaking, but if you remember that era, it is definitely worth checking out because there are a couple things you'll be like, wait. Just the idea that those fucking guides, and I got to go find those guys. I know I had that one lady's magazine, just that they were, it's crazy to me. I guess I grew up on thinking, oh, this is from Ty itself. This is from TY. This is them. They made this guide. No, some lady in her fucking house. Unbelievable. Next week, Scream in the 355. We got an interview now with Cameron Monaghan. Really awesome interview. Yeah. He had a reference to a very old food or beverage thing that we used to talk about on LCD all the time.
Crazy.
Which wasn't about LCD, but he brought it up, and that's how we knew we'd connect with him. We knew it. We knew it right then and there. All right, excited to be joined by Cameron Monaghan today. How are you doing? We were just talking before we started here. We don't usually, we're like talking to someone with only an AirPod microphone or like just a computer. You've got like the podcaster setup going, and it's just if you feel like you're one of us right now, it's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. I'm just like I'm setting up for my Twitch stream. You know, I'm just gonna be doing a bunch of Madden for the next few hours. So I just had to get the whole mic set up ready, and now I'm gonna scream a lot and hopefully get some views.
All you're missing is like a rainbow colored keyboard, like a keyboard that like just emanates rainbow colored light for some
reason. Oh yeah, in a gamer chair, man.
Yes, exactly.
Some serious gamer gear, you know, be slurp down some like Red Bull or something and just fucking go. Am I allowed to swear?
Yes,
I
don't know. Oh yeah, you can. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like it's usually like an energy drink that you've never heard of and then you'll never see again after one or two streams. That's usually like that's the other like staple of those things.
Oh yeah, you remember Balls? Do you remember Balls
energy drink? Oh yeah.
Hell yeah. It had the dots all over it. Yeah, that was classic. I want to bring Balls back.
We tried.
This was sponsored by Balls.
Yeah, so we tried to. We got it.
Did you? No way. Office.
Swear to God, like one of our first ever episodes, like 4 years ago, we had another co-host. He hung up the podcast because he retired. Our friend Trill Ballins, and he talked about how he grew up drinking Balls energy drink. And somebody sent us a box of it, but it was definitely not like a new box. They were like filmy. It was great though.
Vintage, aged Balls. Best.
Exactly.
We'll move on to Zima after that. Not just talking old energy drinks here. Let's get into talking about Shattered in theaters and on demand January 14th and available on Blu-ray and DVD February 22nd. A rich divorcee, Chris, falls in love with a mysterious woman, Sky, where Chris's ex-wife and his child eventually gets trapped in a desperate fight for survival will most likely ensue. Tell us, feel like movie that we Ken Jack and I kind of pull from this of recent times, A Simple Favor, maybe a little more edge to it. Well, what would you compare this movie to and best describe to our audience?
I would say like the Basic Instinct, Poison Ivy, Single White Female, like those kind of relationship-y thriller kind of stuff. But that being said, it also has a real dark funny streak going on with it too. And the movie really like explodes in the later part of it. It goes a lot further than what you think it's going to go. And it's great. Like it combines like that kind of thriller notion with like, it has like a romance aspect, but then it's also like horror and like kind of a nightmare at the same time. It's a fun ride is what I'll say.
I think a lot of our audience, like they know you as being someone who can deliver a really good, crazy performance. And on this one, and this time, like you're kind of on the receiving end of the crazy person performance from Lily Crew. What was that like?
It was interesting. It was interesting. You know, after playing so many villain roles and like those kinds of guys, it is interesting to be on the other side of it and be like, oh, that's what that feels like. That's what I've been putting people through. It was a lot of fun. She was really just like giving a ton of really fun stuff to bounce off of. And she has a great presence in the movie. And it was a good time.
Also produced by John Malkovich, who's also in the movie. That has to be, I mean, you're right around our age. I mean, but John Malkovich is just one of those figures in Hollywood who he just stands out. I mean, being John Malkovich, anything else he's in, how great was that? Not only being able to just act with John Malkovich, but someone who, you know, producing the movie as well.
Yeah, man, it was sick. It was really cool. That was obviously one of the big incentives to becoming part of the project. And, you know, I always say, like, don't meet your heroes because usually they don't live up to it. But he was great. He was just a super solid guy, great work ethic and like not a jerk, you know, really supportive of cast and crew, funny. And obviously he brought so much to it as well from a performance aspect. He is the main source of comedy for the movie. And he's just really consistently, he gets like a lot of laughs and it's a good time. Like, you know, he's got such an amazing voice and it's just so great listening to hear him talk. You know, he's like my ASMR, you know, I just like wanted him to tell me a story because it was always just amazing to listen to him speak. And then I just worked with Morgan Freeman right after that. It's just like two amazing voices in a row. So,
seriously.
No, it was pretty sick. Just like those were like my own personal like podcast experiences where I'm just like, just tell me a story, man, because this is, it's amazing. You sound so great.
That's so awesome. I think one thing that kind of shocked me after I watched the trailer of it, and then I went and just like looked at the details of the movie, was that like I found out that Lee Krug was actually German, and like her American accent is so good in the trailer. Like I never even would have thought of that. And that just made me think, like, is there any sort of accent that you as an actor are dying to try out, whether it's, you know, Southern, New York or European, whatever. There's one where you're like, I could probably do this.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really fascinated by Appalachian like accents, like, you know, hill dwelling people and people who like live in hollers, work in coal mining, that kind of stuff. I think that that's just such an interesting aspect of American culture and something that we don't explore all that much. And that's because like they're geographically separated, as well as so much of the accent comes from like a historical like thing. It's like a lot of them were like immigrants and migrants who kind of moved away, and so they developed their own little pocket of language, and I think that's just super cool. So I'd love to see that explored. But you know, like accent and voice work is just some of my like favorite stuff, and I always look for the opportunity to be able to do that.
Has there been one that maybe you're like, I don't know if I have it yet. Like you work on, is there one that maybe besides when you just said, is there one though, like you've had in your back pocket, you're trying to really like, maybe like a bigger, I don't know if it's, I mean, British seems like the most stereotypical thing to ask an American, but you know what I mean there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, I almost don't want to say it because I don't want to be tested, because I've never been one of the people that like, I don't like to like switch into an accent. I like to like speak in it and actually just like live in that for a while. But that being said, I really like the Irish accent, and it was something that I was terrible at upon first doing it. But I've been working with a voice and dialect coach on it for a while now, and it's actually getting pretty consistent. There was a project that I was trying to develop about an Irish boxer that ultimately didn't get made, but it was good. It was like a really good learning experience, and to kind of get like an understanding of the mechanics of voice, I think is really great. So hopefully, you know, I don't know if that will be an accent I ultimately ever end up doing, but it was a great learning tool regardless.
I feel like we don't see enough of that, by the way. Like you always see, it'll be like, which is great. Like I love seeing Keanu Reeves go around like a range and like learn how to be John Wick and all that. But we don't get enough of the dialect and voice like coach montages. Like I think we need more of that.
It's like there's different ideas of what an actor is, isn't there? There's like the guys that are just so great at what they do. When you have like a Nicolas Cage or The Rock or somebody like that, who are just like, they're so charismatic and fun, and like you are so idiosyncratic that it's amazing for you just to be you. And then you also have the other side of it, where you have like a Gary Oldman or Ben Kingsley or something like that, who are just completely transformative. And then I think that the majority of actors live somewhere in the middle and try to be flexible in what they are. But I've always been such a big fan of the character actors and the performers that are really just like chameleons and are able to completely shift. And so, yeah, that's my aspiration, and hopefully something that I get to do more of in my career.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that just reminds me of one of your great roles that I love so much, which is in Shameless, because Ian Gallagher, I always found, was just such a complex character with so many levels and like so many like bits of like gray, so to speak, which like I feel like that must have been hard to sort of get into as an actor. But with that sort of role, one where you know going into it that you're going to be able to just explore so many things beyond the surface level, is that like the dream role for an actor, especially when you're looking at television?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely up there for just amazing as an opportunity. You know, the writing was consistently really fun and really challenging on that show. And it always kind of threaded the line of allowing these characters to make a lot of mistakes and not necessarily always have the best motivations, but are usually coming from they're extremely protective of like the people that they love. They're kind of products of their environments, and they're really interesting to explore, even when they're doing things that you don't necessarily like about them. And that's my favorite kind of stories, are people that you don't necessarily immediately like, but you start to understand and empathize with them. I think that's more interesting than just have a person just be like, you're a good person. Cause it's like, you know, look, you make stories about those kinds of people too, and it can be interesting. But I've always been a fan of a protagonist that tends to challenge you. And yeah, Ian was always an exploration in that, especially so much of his stuff was like relationship stuff and kind of like this chaotic and weird and borderline abusive, but also extremely loving relationship that he had. And that was something really interesting to explore. And to be able to do that in the long form over more than a decade is just like ridiculous and an opportunity that essentially no actors get. So I feel very lucky that I was able to do that.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you next. And whenever we talk to someone who's been in a show for so long or a project that goes on for so long, and you started it, what, you're going to be like seven. How old are you when you first started? Between 16, 18, right?
I was about to turn 16 when we filmed the pilot.
So it's not like you were like five and you were oblivious to what you were doing, right. But like, mm-hmm. What is your perspective now, like 10 years later? And with the show, like you said, a show lasting for 5 years nowadays is insane, let alone over a decade.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. Like I was at that kind of nexus point, like in my, like, just like life in general, where, you know, around 15, 16 is where you start really becoming an adult in many ways. It's where you start finding your independence, moving away, considering jobs, sex, like all that stuff starts really becoming a factor in your life. And it was kind of interesting because that was also the biggest career opportunity that I'd had up until that point. And it was definitely something that I was initially really intimidated by. I wasn't sure if it was something that I wanted to do. It was really a lot. It was extremely like blunt and in your face. And even though I was always a fan of stories like that, I wasn't sure if that was something that I wanted to do personally yet, because it was just like a very weird, exposing thing. You know, I had like so many questions of like, oh, this character is very, really different from me in certain aspects. And do I feel comfortable putting myself out there in such a big way? And what will people think of me or whatever? And then ultimately, I just kind of realized like that's the responsibility of like a performer and what they're supposed to do is, you know, you have to, you should be doing things that you are intimidated by. You should be a little afraid of it. And you can't worry about judgments of like a character or a performance or something like that. You just have to just throw yourself into it. It's the only way through it, really. And if you're not doing things that that are not in some way helping you also grow in your own perspective, then like, why are you doing it, really? So yeah. It was definitely a challenging opportunity, but one that I was really thankful for, especially because I got to meet so many incredible people who I became very close to and who I also really admire as actors and creators as well.
Mm-hmm. I like that you mentioned that, just doing work that you find challenging, because there obviously, I think one role that a lot of our listeners are very hyped about that you had done before previously was just in Gotham playing playing the Joker essentially. And like you've talked before about how there was no bigger shoes to fill than Phil stepping into like the Joker. And I always wondered, was it like helpful just the fact that you're playing like a proto Joker, right? Mm. Like you were playing, you had space to sort of make the character your own versus trying to repeat or rehash anything that had been done previously. And I'm sure that must've been like just a helpful tool, I guess, for you or limitation.
Yeah. I mean, it was interesting because I never viewed the character as like, this is the proto Joker or something like that. Look, I always felt the character was the Joker, and upon immediately being introduced, I thought the only way to be able to play that was he is, but it's him when he was younger, and it's about finding the character in a different context. And, you know, I mean, that's to be said with any role, regardless of what the figure that you are portraying as a name, you have to just look at what is it that is being presented within the narrative of the story. What are you trying to accomplish? What are you trying to communicate? And then you have to kind of go from there. So all of the auxiliary stuff of like, there's a lot of pressure about this and there's been great performances and blah, 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 really have to take a back seat, and you just have to kind of take it one scene at a time and understand the character primarily as, you know, how they're existing within the story beyond anything else. But yeah, I mean, that was definitely interesting. Yeah, I don't know if it was a help or a hindrance. It was just it was what it was.
The storyline too, and I feel like the kind of legacy within the show of that character, and you know, the twins come in, killed off, like all, like it felt like there was craziness around the character. Did that add to it? Did it make it more difficult? Was it like an instability thing, or like did it kind of just add to the idea that it is a crazy character and there's just craziness around the character?
Yeah, but I mean, the character might be from a viewer perspective crazy, but again, you know, obviously you have to be living truthfully within a character, and from his perspective, he's completely reasonable, and you know what he's doing is the most sane thing in the world. And he's just having fun doing the things that he very much enjoys. The fact that those things tend to be murder and chaos and torture are just, you know, taking a backseat to the fact that he's just trying to live his best life, man. I mean, I don't know. I think that ultimately it was really challenging because it was a story in long form, and usually a character like that, they benefit from being there for a short amount of time, and you have a set arc and something already done for them. And going from one season to the next was always challenging of like, oh, okay, so this is what we're going to do with the character. I don't know if that was necessarily what I was building towards in the previous season. How do I need to recalibrate? Like, what is it that I need to change? That was always the hardest part of playing that character, was just not necessarily knowing where it was going in the future, and trying to, you can't like really, like you can't future proof a performance. You just have to do what makes sense at the time and hope that you're supported in the long run by where the story ends up going.
Reminder: Shattered in theaters on demand January 14th. Now, you may be able to tell we like Star Wars a little bit, just a touch. Yeah.
I got the ticket back.
Just mild Star Wars fans. Yeah, I mean, just a little bit, not a ton. There's a little bit of news though. So for those who have not played the game, you play Cal, a Jedi in the Star Wars universe, in the canon of the Star Wars universe. Cannot say the word canon when it comes to Star Wars. A lot of rumors about Fallen Order 2 this week. Is there anything you can say on that?
There's not anything I can say.
Oh, what a shock.
I know. All I can say is it would be very nice to be able to return back to the character. And when we were making the first one, we certainly had ideas of what we would like to do going forward. So it would be very nice for us to be able to return to that and explore some of those things.
To say we have bad luck would be an understatement. Will Reese, let's go Reese. Oh, Will Poulter interviewed him the next day. He's announced as Adam Warlock.
And right.
So
after.
Yeah. Tomorrow, I'm sure you'll be tweeting like some official announcement. Would it be like, oh, okay. But I remember a video that you did before this came out, which I think is one of the coolest things. Like one of the coolest like ideas to me as anyone in like your position. It was on like a Force Friday and they released you opening up your action figure.
Oh
like,
yeah,
yourself as a fucking toy, like that. Is there anything like as cool in terms like as cool as that? Like that has to be one of the coolest fucking things ever.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's so cool because so much of like why we become actors or like anything like that was, at least for me, was because I was like a kid, like playing with toys and playing on the playground. And, you know, I was a huge fan of not only Star Wars, but like stuff like The Matrix and Harry Potter and that kind of stuff. And those toys were so valuable because they were the tools for our imagination. Mm-hmm. Like they were kind of that jumping off point. And that, you know, my hope is that a character like Cal becomes that for some kid somewhere else in the world. You know, to then that is like they're playing around with their stories of Cal and that gets their imagination going, and hopefully they one day get their own action figure because they're doing their own thing, you know. So yeah, I mean that is just like one of those moments of like, oh wow, I guess I've like made it, like I guess I'm here. Like you're looking at it and it still is like really weird and surreal, you know. It sits in my office on one of my shelves. And every time I see it, I'm just like, I guess we did that. That's amazing.
That was me with my Max Steel doll growing up. And then they made it. Yeah. So I think you lucked out in that with every single Star Wars property that ever gets made, there's always a droid tie-in or a tiny droid drug tie-in. Not all of them are great, but BD-1 is like a top five most cute, adorable, amazing droid in the Star Wars universe. And I think that like you must have, I just imagine you coming on a set and saying, because I know they made that like 3D printed version of them for you when you were doing like mocap or whatever. And I can't imagine the relief when you see how great this droid is just looking at it, right?
BD-1 stands for best droid number one, in my opinion, because he is by far my favorite droid. And yes, I am really biased, but also I love BD so much. It's actually amazing. We have a really talented motion capture artist named Gideon Emery, who is on set with me every day. Anytime there's BD in the scene, which is, you know, pretty much all the time. And if we didn't have him when we were making the game, I don't think that that character interaction would have worked. We had our very first shoot, we shot without having him there. And basically we just had the equivalent of like a green ball on a stick, and who was holding the green ball changed from scene to scene. And they were just kind of reading the lines of like, yeah, let's go over there. You know, and then we got Gideon. And he uses a nose flute, it's like nose whistle. It covers your mouth and you like breathe into it and makes the, and he was able to be really emotive and expressive by doing that. And it helped because so much of the character interactions, because they're not in English, so much of it is done through timing and context. And if you don't have someone who is on top of that, those interactions just aren't going to work. Shout out to Gideon for that one, because like, yeah, that dynamic, I don't think would work without him.
You don't think about when you're playing a game like that or watch it, you don't think about the nose whistle. It just doesn't come to mind. So
yeah. No, I
don't. You also, I will say, you're active on social media. Did you get tagged? Because I remember this. Your character, and thank God, because my whole life I called them AT-AT Walkers. Did you get tagged a lot on Twitter when people realized your character called them AT-AT Walkers and not AT-ATs in Star Wars?
Yeah, I think that like if you're growing up in any place, you have slang for stuff, and you know, I thought that like the character wouldn't be so formal that he would be saying
AT-AT
all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, people call things, it's like calling a car, like an engine in a car, like a straight six or a flat six or whatever. It's like, you're not always going to be like, this is an inline six or this is a boxer engine. This is whatever. Like you can call things a bunch of different things. And I don't know. I think it's kind of funny. Like when people do get super pedantic about that stuff and then you consider like in real life, like no one agrees about anything, you know, it's just like,
as two super nerds, Star Wars is like another level.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have to say now, you know, your pronunciation is canon and it's in the world. So, you know, you're welcome.
There it is. Perfect.
So satisfying. Yeah.
Something I think that we've all been looking forward to is just an eventual introduction of Cal Kestis into other Star Wars properties. I know when we were watching Star Wars The Bad Batch, there was a scene with the Scrappers Union, which like I was like, oh my God, Cal Kestis is about to show up. Didn't end up happening. We were waiting for maybe a potential live action series. And I don't know if you remember this, but you actually have a Mandalorian connection personally. Do you know this?
Remind me. I feel like I do know this. Wait, hold on. Just tell me.
You voiced twins in an episode of The Last Airbender, which was directed by Dave Filoni, who is showrunner of Mandalorian and Boba Fett.
That's true. Yeah.
So you have your in for the potential Cal Kestis series.
But I've actually never met Dave Filoni, and I do very much want to meet him. I really do admire so much of what he's been doing. I do have some crossover. I have the world's smallest part in Avatar The Last Airbender. I play twins and I have one line each. So, you know, but that's another thing that is pretty cool to be like, yeah, but I still got to be on Avatar. So hell yeah.
before, and I will note, they just introduced a comic character crossed over. So, I mean, I think it's a matter of time before we see you live act. I mean, not that I'm going to ask you, you couldn't tell us about the game. So at this point, we'll just move on. And there, Lucasfilm's got the scopes on you. So we won't risk your life here. Before we go, we always ask people this. Six movies can be your six favorite movies, can be a guilty pleasure thrown in there, something you've seen recently that you want someone to see. Just any six movies, just throw them at us.
Damn. Okay. I watched a bunch of Spanish movies because I just went to Spain. So I was kind of just like watching a bunch of stuff that I had never really seen before. So I watched this movie called Bad Education, which was awesome, with Gael Garcia Bernal. One called Jamón that was like super crazy, with Penelope Cruz, and like I think one of her very first film roles. Getting out of movies that I just saw recently. I want to stick with that. Let me just stick with this movies that I hadn't seen before. I recently watched this film series called Three Colors Blue. That was just like blew my mind. Oh, it's so good. It's so good. Those are a series of Polish director, but French movies. I'd like to give a shout out to a movie called Fallen Angels, which is it's a Hong Kong movie from the 90s that is just super sick, and everybody should check it out. Where am I at on the number?
I think you're 1, 2, 3, 4. So two more.
Four. Okay, two more. Let me throw it back old school because it just jumped into my mind. I hadn't seen 2001 A Space Odyssey in a while, and rewatching it again was just so like, good. Man, why does this look so good still?
Right.
And then let's go with something. I don't know. I'm just going to give love to Inglourious Bastards because I just love that movie.
You have to.
I just love Inglourious Bastards. So,
I got a poster of that up in my hallway. You can't see it. And my girlfriend was like, do we need a poster with like a giant swastika on it in the middle of the hallway? And I was like, yeah, but they're killing Nazis. That's the whole movie.
They're killing Nazis, though. So, exactly. You know. Wait,
if you saw Spanish movies, did you see, and there's no way to watch it in the US, The Good Boss with Javier Bardem?
But that was on my list, and I was trying to get a hold of it.
It is apparently so damn good. I think it's Spain's movie for the Oscars, and he talked about it recently when he was talking about Dune, and he talked so glowingly about it, but I can't find it anywhere, and it's maddening.
I did watch like 10 Javier Bardem movies, but that was not one of them, unfortunately.
Nobody can find, and we can, when you can't find a movie in New York, you can't find a movie anywhere.
Yep.
Well, we're starting a campaign. We're putting pressure on them to release it in America. There's a market somewhere. We know there's at least two people in America that want to watch it.
Exactly.
Thank you so much. Again, Shattered Theaters, January 14th and on demand. This is an absolute blast. I hope we get to talk to you again.
Thanks so much, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
That was fun. Have a good one. Thank you. All right, favorite movies of 2021. I'll start with Chris. Top five favorite movies. Maybe not necessarily best, favorite.
Well, I mean, it's ironic because this year my five favorite and five best really did kind of overlap. So that was a bit strange that it worked out that way. I'm glad it worked out that way. Real quick, just a few that didn't make the list. Belfast, Pig, Val, Worth, and Free Guy. But my number five, Tick, Tick, Boom. I'll be honest, I actually think this is just like above average, but it's elevated because I think Andrew Garfield is amazing in this. Like, I don't think he's going to win the Oscar, but I would consider voting for him if I vote. I think his stock rose more than I think any actor this year, not including like newcomers like Cooper Hoffman or somebody like that. Number four, Spider-Man No Way Home. There's still people who think I hate this movie. Like,
yeah, same here.
I understand my rating system is different, but like, I think it's great. I think it's a ton of fun. I don't put it in the Marvel, what I call the God tier, where I put Infinity War, Endgame, and Winter Soldier. But it's comfortably in that set tier with Iron Man and the first Avengers and Guardians of the Galaxy. And dude, I mean, we reviewed it. Like, it is a one in a million, like, holy shit, this actually happened idea. You know, and the fact that it worked and it was executed well and it was made with a lot of heart. Like, I don't think there's a single person, honestly, who come out of this and not, like, at least appreciate what it was as a blockbuster. Yeah, like, it's a big fucking theme park ride, but fun. I don't know what to say. Number three, King Richard. This was, like, you know, probably the feel-good movie of the year for me. Will Smith taking a role that is probably going to be iconic for him, and I would be surprised if it didn't win him an Oscar. It moves at a good pace. It has some good humor to it, a lot of good heart. And, I mean, as I said in my review for it, like, you can't knock a movie for being cliched when all this stuff happened. You know, I mean, it's an incredible story of two women who changed tennis and a father who pushed them to be as good as they could possibly be. And really, I mean, much like Tick, Tick, Boom, I think it's a good movie that becomes really good to great based on how good the central performance is. Will Smith is amazing. Number two, and this is the, people hate me for this, and I am the one guy who, like, just feels this way about this movie. I just adore Don't Look Up. It's, like, one of my favorite movies, the comedies ever. And I know
you're not even remotely alone on that, though.
Mm-hmm. I'm not. I don't
a
know.
A lot of people really like it. A lot of people don't like it. And then there's, like, me and Ken Jack.
Mm-hmm. Right. I also don't know of anybody who has it at number two. I mean, that is admittedly higher than, like, any other critic that I've seen. I understand the division, but, like, so what? I mean, you could say that about anybody. I understand why people don't like it. I get it. It was a weird movie to be released on Christmas. It's politically motivated. It is preachy, but I thought it was funny as fuck. So I have it at my number two. I think it's great. It's a personal bias thing, and that's fine. Number one, and again, I think this is almost unfair. West Side Story is my number one, and it's the gap between, like, one and two here is pretty substantial. Like, I just 5 minutes into this movie, I'm like, well, this is going to be the best movie of the year. And there is admittedly West Side Story to me is one of the greatest stories ever. I have an attachment to the original. I have an attachment to the source material. So, you know, there is a personal bias, but I really, like, it just makes me very upset that nobody saw this thing, because I think it's remarkable, and I hope it gets, like, a little award season bump, which I think it will. Performances are great. I think, you know, Ken Jack, you talked about how Spielberg's previous decade was not his best, and I agree with you. This, to me, it was like, you know, it was like him finding his fastball again, and not just finding his fastball, but finding his changeup, finding his curve. I mean, everything was working for him with this movie. Love the performances, and it's the best looking movie. The cinematography is just gorgeous, and it does really a built-in, like, one of the best soundtracks of any musical. So yeah, it's number one, you know, with a bullet. I adore it, but yeah, that's my list. Those are my top five.
Mm-hmm. Ken Jack, top five favorite of the year.
It's a good group. I'm gonna start at the bottom with this movie we didn't unfortunately get a chance to talk about a lot. It's Mass. Very, very depressing movie, but very, yes, very, very, very good. For those of you that didn't know about it, it was about a like a family coming to terms with a school shooting that had happened. It's like the parents of the shooter meeting with the parents of one of the victims and, like, trying to, like, come to reconciliation with each other. Jason Isaacs, actually kind of funny, a guy we talk about a lot, the guy who played Donald Blythe in House of Cards, who we always love talking about. I believe his name is Reed Burney, Ann Dowd, Martha Plimpton, and a couple other people as well. Really, really good, really, really intense character movie. They're all, like, in this room for the entire movie. They just bouncing off each other in, like, these really, really intense, intense moments. And, like, it's not like a movie you walk away like, wow, that was really fun to watch or anything like that. But you walk away and you're like, I just saw four incredible acting performances. Like, there's no, all four of them crushed it, like, Oscar level crushed it. And, like, they make you feel some serious deep down emotion. And that is very, very successful in that opinion. I really, really like that. Next would be Red Rocket. We talked about it a little bit a couple episodes ago. Fucking awesome movie. Seeing Simon Rex get his little renaissance has been just an amazing thing to see. I just can't wait to see more. I can't wait to see more of the Simon Rex renaissance. I just saw a clip on Twitter when I was scrolling before of him from Scary Movie when, like, the aliens are saying, like, oh, we choke each other out to say hello. And Simon Rex is like, oh, well, how do you say goodbye? And the alien just kicks him in the nuts. I'm like, he's went from that to this over the course of, like, two decades, which is crazy. Because, again,
one of the aliens pisses in Leslie Nielsen's mouth.
Exactly. It's crazy to know he's went from that to Red Rocket, which was exceptional. Pig would be next up for me. Pig, Nicolas Cage, absolutely incredible in that movie. That dinner scene, I think, might be my singular favorite scene of the year. When he's like going back and forth with like his former, the guy who had worked for him in his restaurant. I think it was like just not like a life changing role for Nicolas Cage, but that's one of those ones that just, it reminds you, he really does give 110% to everything he does. Something I always appreciate. Next would be Belfast. We talked a lot about Belfast. I think it did a lot of incredible stuff. Just as far as like the way it was shot, the amount of personal investment into it. And you know what I watched this weekend is, I know a movie that's one of Jeff's favorites, Wild Wild West, where he plays a Dr. Artemis Lovelace or whatever. And it's just, it's so funny to see how with these projects that he could tell he's not very invested in, like his performance maybe isn't that great, or like when he's directing something like Artemis Fowl, maybe his job's not that great, but Belfast, he was so personally invested in. I think it made it the movie so much better. And man, Katrina Balfe, right, was so good in that. Jamie Dornan crushed it. Kieran Hines as well. Everyone, not a bad performance in that movie. And then my number one would be, and I'm going to try and pronounce it right, Kovadis Aida, right? The one that takes place in Bosnia. Yep. That one was, that's a heart-wrenching movie, really exceptionally acted. And that's one where like, if you are able to express such an insane amount of emotion through like multiple language barriers, I think it's always very impressive to me as again, Western or just a foreign language audience goer. And I think the main actress in it, whose name escapes me right now, she was really, really good, as was the rest of the family members in that. And it shed light on something that I think a lot of people don't know about, just like what the whole, all the issues that happen with the UN in Eastern Europe, because I think there's so many fucked up weird things that happen in Eastern Europe that everyone just kind of molds them all together and doesn't really remember them. But there's a lot of like very like pointed issues that had happened there, especially over the 90s and into the 2000s, that people just don't know about. And I think it shed a lot of that. And really, really good screenwriting, really, really good acting. And it was exceptional. It was almost like Schindler's List is the wrong way to try to explain it, but like, it is almost kind of like that. It's like a Schindler's Listy type of movie, minus the black and white. And it was really, really good. But yeah, that's my top five favorite.
Eddie, five favorite movies of the year.
Yeah. So I kind of did slack on the first half of the year, so I'll just kind of keep it at this. There were a bunch of, you know, solid movies. Okay. Movies. Like I thought Candyman was fine. And, I enjoyed Ghostbusters mostly. And, I would say I'll give you a top two. Okay. I will also note too that there's a lot of controversy over Many Saints of Newark, even though I did really enjoy it.
And you did. You stood up and clapped, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, I didn't stand up and clap, but I enjoyed it. It was I don't know, the music hits at the end and it just made me ready to go. What can I say? But the two things I'll say, I'm going to echo Chris there. King Richard was absolutely phenomenal. Yeah. The shots of Compton, like the back and forth, like the houses looked incredible. The vans. Will Smith, you just can't say enough. I thought Bernthal was also a very funny character
too. I agree. I loved him in it. Yeah.
Yeah. He was great, man. He really was. And this is obviously not a blockbuster, but this is a documentary. Some of the music box ones, specifically the Woodstock 99. I don't know if you guys saw that one, yeah. But I was like, I've never been so glued to a TV for 2 hours. Just an unbelievable disaster of an event that I thought Simmons and all those guys did a great job on covering it. So those are probably like two of the more memorable ones I'd say of the year.
Yeah. The music box things have been pretty cool. I've liked those. The one on Woodstock was neat, was a pretty neat and crazy look, especially for the more negative stuff.
Yeah. And the Juice WRLD one was crazy too.
Yeah. Eddie, you know which one you should watch?
What's that?
The Movies That Made Us.
Oh yes. I got
to
do that.
And I want to keep pitching you to watch eventually.
Mm-hmm. My top five favorite, much different than best. Favorite for me does not mean best. This is where you factor in, you know, theater experience, you know, nerd stuff. That's like that type of shit, which you'll know in a second when you see my number two. Number five, The Suicide Squad. I thought it was the best comic book movie of the year. I fucking loved it. Thought James Gunn did such a good job bringing back a lot of people from an awful movie and making it very enjoyable. Idris Elba and John Cena played off each other so fucking well. And so did our guy, Joel Kinnaman, Rick Flagg. Just a very fun, enjoyable, cool action, crazy wild comic book shit. I thoroughly enjoyed The Suicide Squad. And I liked the first time we saw it and loved the second time we saw it again in theaters. For West Side Story, that's in my top three best. I hope more people see it. Not great at the box office, but Everyone who's seen it's really, for the most part, loved it. And also should get pretty good consideration, Oscar Best Picture, but we will see. Again, though, box office wise, not doing all that great. I thought Steven Spielberg, one of the better directing jobs of the year. I fucking love the music of West Side Story, and they just made the original West Side Story movie, and just, in my opinion, made it a little better. It looked fantastic, too. Three Red Rocket, my favorite performance of the year. Simon Rex, as Ken Jack mentioned, really fucked up movie. but man, I just think Sean Baker's a fucking genius. This Tangerine, the Florida Project. Number two, Spider-Man No Way Home. I've seen it a couple times in theaters now. Absolute blast. Goosebumps all the way. Them swinging around the Statue of Liberty is them jumping off and yelling together. Like, that's just, look, if you like comic book movie stuff, you like MCU shit, it's hard to not, again, get goosebumps and just go crazy over that. And number one for me is my actual best movie of the year. It's Dune. You can't go see a movie five times in theaters and not have it be your favorite movie of the year. I'll just put it that way. Like, that's just kind of, I feel like that's like the rule. Unreal IMAX experience. I fucking love the story. Reading the book, I took a break reading the book, back doing that. Cheated a little bit using the audio book, which makes it difficult because they skip some words and lines here and there. It makes a dumb reader have an even harder time reading, but enjoy it. I got the fucking graphic novel. I've become obsessed with Dune, and it's from who I think is the best director in Hollywood right now, Denis Villeneuve. So excited for the next part of Dune. But Dune is not just my best of the year, but also my favorite. So those are our lists. Good movies on there. Some real good stuff. It was a very packed year for movies. A very, very crowded year for movies. But where it lands in terms of ratings and stuff, we'll talk about that next week. We'll do our final like best of list next week. We'll compare it to the last couple of years where Ken, Jack, and I have things rated and all that. Eddie, thanks for hopping on.
Of course, always fun. Thanks.
Go find your Beanie Babies.
Yeah, exactly. I got to go dig those out.
I told my parents, like, you know, we should get those authenticated.
By the lady herself.
I do think they are going to catch a little bit of a boom. I don't think you're going to make millions of dollars, but I it would make sense that at some point you have some people may have a couple that are worth making sure you have ready to sell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that reminds me of the Von Dutch one. Did you guys see that, Doc?
No. Yes. Wait, which one?
Von Dutch. They did a whole thing, a 3-part series on Hulu about the Von Dutch hat and Von Dutch brand. That was very good too. I should have mentioned that as well.
Oh, that's awesome.
I actually didn't even realize that or talk about that with you. Are you a big Von Dutch guy?
No, I never was. I mean, I knew, was obviously very aware of it.
It's on Hulu, right? More,
but yeah. Uh-huh. It was very good. Crazy story.
It is. I forgot about that one. That's it for Chris, Eddie, Ken, Jack. I'm Jeff Lowe. Next week, Scream. Ooh.
I'm pumped. Temple. You know me. I like the horror.
You do. Mm-hmm. You do like the horror. Scream in the 355. We'll talk to you next time.
Have a good week at the box office, folks.